In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain.
Nice shooting, John. That seemed to be right on target.
I'm learning how to push buttons, Stan.
Oh, no.
I'm John Krolinski.
I am Stan Hudson. We want to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle, where we take lighthearted looks at the serious issues of evolution and creation. Lighthearted because we know no other way.
And lightheaded because that's the only head we got.
Anyway, Stan, today we are talking, we kind of talked about pushing buttons. We're in a studio here, and you know what I see all around me?
Yeah.
Lots of buttons.
Buttons and dials and things that work.
I can push your button.
No, please, don't do that.
There you went. You came right back. See, I can push your button.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about button pushing on a very serious level. Today, we're going to talk about cosmology buttons.
Well, that's a big button. That's a big word.
Cosmology. Have to do with makeup and things?
No, that's cosmetology
button. Oh, excuse me.
When you push the cosmetology button.
We need to push that one around here, John. No offense.
Use more of it.
Yes.
You know what?
Cosmology buttons. What is a cosmology, John?
A cosmology, some people call them worldviews.
Worldviews
or cosmology buttons are basically a term that's used to, it's that underlying ideas we have about why we exist, how we exist, where we came from, how things work, how things don't work. It's the way in which we interpret our world around us.
It's our view of reality. I mean, like the model of what forces are out there and shaping things and moving things, whether there's a big one called God or just nature has
and
the power.
And stuff.
Okay.
Usually the ultimate one is I exist. And I can make rational sense of my world. And then right after that thought comes really this idea of supernatural being exists or he doesn't exist. And so it's, you start with God or no God, supernatural or no supernatural.
Well, when we talk about creation and evolution, those views are diametrically opposed cosmologies if you think about it.
Yeah, that's basically the fundamental issue. It's not so much an issue of data as an issue of perspective of which you look at data from.
Worldviews or cosmologies, and a creationist, of course, assumes from the beginning, it's a major assumption, the foundation, that there is a God, a creator God who is responsible for all things that we know.
We have those creator God glasses on, and that's all we do. When we look at our world, we first see it through the eyes of a loving creator God who made us, and we have to see all events, including some things that are hard to interpret through those loving creator God eye glasses.
And yet God gives us his word, the Bible, and we, through that, get some answers to some of the things we see around us.
And insights into why things may look good or bad, or how to interpret correctly the bad we see about us. And that's one of the big things that the opposite cosmology button, so to speak, or the cosmology viewpoints that people have, like scientists have, they have a hard time seeing this in the light of a creator God. So they have a materialistic glasses they put on.
Yes, material is all that there is. The universe as we see it is all that there is. And that is the basis of evolution. Evolution says that we are here thanks to fortunate happenings and with natural forces, but nothing greater, not a supernatural force.
And that's sort of the problem. What goes on now is that we have two opposing views. We have creationists on one side, or maybe there's even the movement, the intelligent design movement.
Yeah.
And then there's the non-intelligent, undesigned movement, I guess.
Yes, those who believe that. That'd be creations. Me, you know, speaking, unintelligent.
Well, yeah.
No.
We're talking about the unintelligent, no-designer movement, which is basically a materialist movement.
And Darwin led that pack and so forth. But, you know, lately we've been getting in the news, we've been hearing about court cases that involve the intelligent design movement and how they've been trying to get science in different classrooms around America to consider intelligent design as an option to evolution. And of course, there have been, you know, some state boards, Kansas and some others have tried.
Pennsylvania, Delaware.
Right. They've been trying to add little other options besides evolution in the teaching format. And it came to court in Pennsylvania recently. where the judge there in the state court said that intelligent design is not science, it's religion. And he had a hard time seeing it any other way. And so we're kind of, and you know, if you think about it, here's my issue with intelligent design people. And intelligent design people are not necessarily literal Genesis believers. They just simply have a doubt about Darwin's understanding of how we got here. They see maybe God worked it through evolution.
The reality is, though, is that most of them maybe not do not believe necessarily in Genesis, but often they do believe in supernatural.
And they believe in the biblical God.
And they believe in a biblical God. They may not agree with the Genesis account.
Right.
And so they aren't the pure fundamental Baptist creationist who 7 days is the whole universe.
Like
maybe.
Us.
Well, like us, or Ken Ham type, or the others that may have a similar view as far as at least we may differ a little bit from them a little bit in other ways, but that's another program.
But we appreciate their scientific insights into the problems that evolution has, and we happily quote them from time to time. You know, we're recording today in Spokane, Washington.
Home of a famous ID guy.
Yeah,
Who is that?
Stephen Meyer, Dr. Stephen Meyer, was at Whitworth College for a number of years, and he was one of the founders of the intelligent design movement. So this is kind of and the Gonzaga law professor, whose name escapes me right now, is sort of their advisor in legal matters like this court case in Pennsylvania. So, we're right in the hotbed, so to speak, of some of this intelligent design here in the Northwest. But it seems like that every time they try to present it as just pure science without a religious connection,
skeet shooting.
You'll get lucky here, but you'll miss over here. And it just seems like it falls back into the question of, is intelligent design religion-based or not? And I have to say, yeah,
it's,
I think it is.
Based, yes,
it is religious based.
It is religious based, and that's one of the weaknesses of the ID movement, is the unwillingness to acknowledge, yes, there is some religious background base to it. The sad reality is the other side doesn't want to admit that theirs is also faith based approach as
isn't it?
Oh, come on, make them twist.
You know, and that's really what's going on here, because if you think about it. I'm going to illustrate it a little bit with my own experience at the University of California at Riverside years ago when I was a geology student. And one day I was in class, and I've used this story once before on Sink the Beagle. While I was in class as a geology student and greatly enamored with the whole view of how wonderful science was and open-minded and everything.
Yes, they're the most open-minded creatures in the world.
Oh, man, was I ever, I believe that fully.
There's no bottom to that mind.
Yeah, the pits. But anyway, the professor there one day, the head of the department said, "We have a creationist speaker coming this evening." And then he started to giggle. And you could tell that he had, and then he kind of acted like he caught himself, like he was trying to wrestle with his own cosmology, because he kind of liked the idea of there being a God, but he didn't know quite how to fit it into his scientific understanding of things. And so he said, I do believe in a God. And then, our hands go up. You know how wonderful a day is when you can get the professor off into tangents?
Yes, let's get him going.
Yeah, no quiz tomorrow.
We see a snowball coming.
No quiz going tomorrow.
Get it rolling.
But anyway, we started to raise our hands. But I really had a question for him, and I asked this question. I said, and I was not a Christian at the time. I said, are you saying that the world got here kind of under natural forces completely, the Big Bang or whatever, and there was some divine person or some great creature on the other side of the universe watching this whole thing, and then said, that planet is going to need a God. I think I'll go offer my services. And he was dumbfounded. And I felt bad about it because he was clearly nervous. I put him on the spot. But the thing is, he was trying to understand his own cosmology.
He never worked it out.
He couldn't work it out. And a lot of people can't when they have these conflicting cosmologies to try to jam them together in the same room.
It really shows, actually. Oh, I talk to a class now that I say that everybody has a worldview. Everybody has a cosmology. Mm-hmm. Some are just more developed than others. Mm-hmm. And the sad reality is many people just sort of accept a lot of things their discipline teaches, i.e. science, and never really fully think through the totality of the ramifications.
The ramifications.
The existential ramifications of existence. Why am I here? How did we get here? Where are we going? Is there meaning and purpose to life? Is there things beyond me?
Am I pond scum? Am I, from an ape?
Or am I part of a divine design?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's where the designers are trying to say, I am not pond scum. Mm-hmm. They don't want to acknowledge that they believe that there's they're created. Mm-hmm. When you go across, it's interesting that you cite statistics, Stan, that that you've found that only about between 7 and 10% of scientists basically affirm there is no God. They believe that there is no personal God. The middle ground of some that aren't sure, and a large portion, probably 70% or so, believe that there is.
Well, you said it a little wrong at the first there. I think the 7% are the ones who do believe in God. Yeah.
Oh, and scientists, but I'm just saying, I'm mixing my science versus my national population polls.
Well, you know, this is from a Nature magazine article in 1998. They did a polling of leading scientists, particularly members of the National Academy of Science, and that's sort of an elite thought group, a policymaker. Yeah. And they asked them, do you believe in a personal God? And that definition was someone who has interacted with man. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's how personal. And only 7% believed yes. And 72% said no. Now, look at the national population, like you were saying.
The flip is the national population. Yeah. Only 10% of the national population don't believe in God.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
The 90% do. And that sort of leads up to.
Talk about different cosmology conflicts there.
And that's why people are pushing cosmology buttons. When they get together, when they start arguing in the courts of our nations, like we started earlier talking about it, when they talk about in Pennsylvania, Delaware, all around the nation, Kansas, they're pushing each other's cosmology buttons. They're trying to. It's the hot button topic. It causes people to dig in and get defensive because it actually has a lot of money at stake in some respects. We had a torpedo text, so we'd like to interject and push a few buttons.
Yeah, actually, Paul pushed a few buttons when Paul, the Apostle Paul, visited the city of Athens, which many regard as sort of the birthplace
of science.
Of science and philosophy and everything Western thought. And so he walked among a whole bunch of, you know, you might say,
science geeks.
science geeks. And this is what he said, and this is in the book of Acts chapter 17.
Verse 22,
it says, "Then Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, 'Men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious.'"
That is true. Even science are religious
"For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God. Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing him, I proclaim to you.'" And then went on to describe his understanding of God as, of course, the great creator.
And then he also talked about the God, the creator, who came and became the great redeemer, who was resurrected. And when he hit the resurrection button, that just totally blew. That was way beyond anything that they were even considering. That sort of just blew a bunch of gaskets and circuits.
Blew science gaskets.
All over the place. I mean, he pushed the button. He said, don't touch that button. And the irony good news was that there were several there that said, you know what? Maybe that's some men joined him, it says in verse 34. You know, he pushed the button that helped them say, that's the missing piece in my cosmology.
Right. That makes sense to me, that there is purpose to life.
There's a redeemer to this mess that we see.
Yes. And that I'm not here by accident. There is a purpose for my life. There is a creator above and who made all things that we see and that we study. There is order in this universe. We can see the hand of a creator. And as Paul explained to them what his understanding was of the problems in the world and how God had sent Jesus to solve the greatest problem, which is sin and suffering, that, you know, there were some who wanted to believe. And that's what we want to invite you, listener. If you're having problems with your cosmology today, listen to Paul's sermon in Acts 17, and you might find some answers.
And that's what we like to teach here on
Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time to another episode of Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.